Okay, good morning, Chem 38 class. Today we're going to be doing activity 25. Activity 25 is about endothermic versus exothermic reactions. And so I know that we did this a little bit when we did the last activity, endothermic and exothermic. This one covers it in a slightly different way. So we're going to take a look at a deeper dive sort of into endothermic and exothermic without all the entropy stuff that we did last time. So just endothermic and exothermic. So let's start a screen share and then we'll get into this. And this is a smaller experiment, so this one's not going to take too much time. All right, let's start that screen share. All right, there we go. A little technical difficulty there in the interim, but we got it now. So activity 25, endothermic and exothermic. So let's look at this enthalpy and determining what an endothermic reaction is and an exothermic reaction is. Okay, so what we said before is enthalpy is energy which is stored in the chemical bonds. And we use a symbol H to represent enthalpy. And so when we look at a chemical equation, we can take any sort of general chemical equation that we want. Let's do hydrogen reacting with oxygen and let's balance it. So we take two of these in order to make water. And to balance this, we're going to get two waters. And so this is hydrogen gas reacting with oxygen gas to make, in this case, we'll do water gas. And when we do this chemical reaction, we have these two hydrogen molecules, and we have an oxygen molecule where the oxygens are bound together. And we'll do the Lewis structures for these as well. What we have to do is we have to break these bonds here. So we're breaking two OH bonds, or two, excuse me, H bonds, two HH bonds are what we're breaking, and we're breaking one OO bond. And on the other side, what we're putting together is we're putting together water molecules, which have a structure where there is an oxygen bound to two hydrogens. And what we need to do is we need to make these two bonds. So we will highlight these bonds here. These are the bonds that we are making. So we are making, maybe I should do that in blue, that we are making four OH bonds. Let's make it as a bond. And these guys that we're breaking over here, when we keep track of how many bonds we're breaking, this is our energy cost. It takes energy to break a bond. You can think about pulling two magnets apart. It takes energy to pull those magnets apart. And on the other side, this is our energy gain. Energy is released when you make a bond. And for any given chemical reaction, so this is just a chemical reaction, and we haven't talked about whether this reaction is endothermic or exothermic. For any given reaction, one side or the other side may be higher. It may cost you more energy than you get out, or you may get more energy out than it costs in order to do a chemical reaction. Those two reactions we give different names, endothermic and exothermic. And so what we describe is we describe here an endothermic reaction. Actually, let's start this on a new page. I'm going to go ahead and move this down. Let's start off with an endothermic reaction. An endothermic reaction is a reaction that costs more energy than it produces. And so what that means is that it takes more energy to break the bonds of the reactants than is gained from forming the bonds of the products. Usually what we say then is that if we have reactants and those reactants are going to form products, it takes energy. And that energy over here is a reactant, and that we have to add energy in order to, I can't grab just that one piece. It does not want to let me do that. Okay, we will cheat and we will just delete that and separate these apart a little bit. I was trying to make it a little bit more readable. And I got a little sloppy in my writing. There we go. So it takes energy in order to convert the reactants to products. And so this is energy as a reactant. Now, when we do these, we generally do an energy diagram. And those energy diagrams look like this. We start off with reactants. Let's make this a slightly longer line. And we go to products. And as we convert from one to the other, we can get a nice smooth curve. Move this down just a little bit. And in this nice smooth curve, what we have is we have the energy and the reaction coordinate. Except nothing looks straight here. Let me try this one more time. Should snap in nice and straight. Okay, so this is what we call the reaction coordinate. And this is energy in the form of enthalpy. And so that is H. And what we're looking at is if we look at this energy diagram, our energy cost is shown on this side. So from this point up here at the top of the graph, if we read over to this point over here, this is the enthalpy of the reactants. And this is the amount of energy required to break the bonds. This is our cost going uphill. It's how much energy it costs in order to be able to get over the activation energy barrier. And that activation energy barrier is also listed here as E sub A. E sub A stands for energy of activation. And it is your energy cost. It is also the enthalpy of the reactants. It's how much energy it takes to break all of the bonds. And then when we looked on the product side, if we measure from the top here to this point here, this is the enthalpy of the products. It's our energy that is produced out of this chemical reaction. So over here, coming down, this is our payback. It's how much energy comes out of the chemical reaction. And in this case, what we find is that the delta H, or the H, the enthalpy of my reactants, the amount of energy it takes to break the bonds, is greater than the amount of energy that is coming out of the products. And this type of reaction, when this is true, this is what we call an endothermic reaction. So what does that mean, that it's actually endothermic? And why do we call it endo? Well, endo means in, and thermic, energy, heat. So this is a reaction that absorbs energy, that absorbs heat. And what generally happens when we have a chemical reaction like this is that if we were to measure the temperature, we find that while the reaction proceeds, the temperature of the reaction goes down. So we can look at a way of looking at an endothermic reaction and recognizing it. An endothermic reaction, when we take and we look at the initial reaction, and so what we'll use, let's use a beaker instead of a cup, or actually not even a beaker, we'll use an Erlenmeyer flask to do our reaction in. If we were to have a thermometer in here, and we measure the temperature of the initial starting point. And so we look to see what that temperature is. And let's say that we measure this initial temperature, temperature initial. And let's say that it started at something like 25 degrees Celsius. And this was as the reaction was starting. So this is actually before the reaction started. And then what we do is we allow some time to pass. And the reaction moves forward. And as the reaction moves forward, we measure the temperature as the reaction finishes. And as that reaction finishes, what we find is that the temperature of the reaction actually goes down. It gets colder. And so we find that when we go and we measure this temperature, that somewhere in here now, maybe it's around 18 degrees Celsius. So why did the temperature actually go down once this reaction was done. This is after the reaction is completed. Well, what's happening is when we look at the reactants and we look at the products, what we said is that here, the enthalpy of the reactants, the amount of energy that it took to break the bonds, was greater than the amount of energy that it took, that was given off when the bonds were made. So this took more energy to break bonds and very little energy produced. When the new bonds were made. And so that costs energy. It's taking energy in order to be able to break all of these bonds. Well, where does that energy come from? That energy comes out of the solution itself. It comes from the environment. It comes from the surroundings. And so what's happening here is energy is literally being sucked. Actually, I'm going to do it this way, because the thermometer, if we think about the thermometer, here's a way that we can demonstrate it a little bit more clearly. And then we'll generalize from this. Let's do sort of a blow up of our thermometer. And as that thermometer is sitting in solution, and inside this thermometer, there is alcohol, which sits in here, that expands or contracts based on temperature, and the glassware that supports it. So there's glass that's inside this thermometer. I'm going to allow this thing to go all the way up like this. That what is happening here is that as the reaction is proceeding, bonds are being broken. So let's take these bonds and say that we have things that are like, well, we'll use reactants. So let's use reactants. We'll use R bonded to R and R bonded to R. It takes energy to break these bonds. And that energy is being pulled out of the thermometer. It's literally being pulled out in order to do the work of breaking the bonds. And as you pull energy out of the thermometer, that thermometer cools down and the energy is being used to break all of the bonds in order to then move forward to be able to make the products. And so as time goes forward here, what winds up happening is our temperature in our thermometer comes down. And so this guy, too big an eraser, this guy, the temperature starts to come down and the temperature decreases. And we have then broken all of these bonds. And as we break all of these bonds, then these can go on to then re-coordinate and make the products. And yet not very much energy is released in making those products. And so the overall temperature of the entire system winds up going down. But how does it pull the energy out of the thermometer? That happens through collisions. So what winds up happening is, if we think about the glass as being silicon and oxygen that is in the glass. And so there are lots of repeating silicons and oxygens that form the glass. So the molecules that are in the glass itself, these molecules, while we draw these bonds are not hard sticks. They're nuclei that are frozen in position, that are bonded together. But these nuclei are allowed to vibrate and jiggle. And based on the speed in which they're vibrating and jiggling, that is related to the temperature. The faster they vibrate, the hotter they are. The slower they vibrate, the colder they are. And so what we have is we have a silicon or an oxygen that is vibrating really, really fast in its position. And it's not just going back and forth. It's kind of vibrating in a spherical direction. It's going in all directions as it's moving and vibrating. And what winds up happening is it winds up hitting this molecule and actually colliding with this molecule that is the reactants. And in the collision, it's a lot like a billiard collision. You can think of a silicon atom hitting this molecule that is comprised of parts. And as it hits it, this thing was moving really fast and it was hot. And as it was really hot and moving fast, it slammed into these two molecules and it broke them in half. It imparted so much energy to it that this guy went flying off in this direction and this guy went flying off in this direction. And when that happened, the silicon didn't get to move. The silicon is still there, but now the silicon has lost some of its energy and it has slowed down. And so it's moving slower. It's not vibrating as quickly now. And so now it's cold. And it did some work to break these two apart that can then go on and reform to make some new products. And so the energy is transferred through collisions. And that's how energy is transferred through all molecules. Energy is transferred through collisions. It's nothing more than a giant game of pool that the molecules are playing, and they're trading energy as they collide with each other. And when these guys broke apart, they're moving a little bit faster now as they move in these directions, and that energy went into breaking the bond and into these particles moving a little bit faster, and the silicon and the glass lost energy. And so energy is literally being pulled out of the thermometer by these particles colliding with it and drawing energy away from it. But it's not just the thermometer. It's the glassware of the container that the whole reaction is in. It is the water molecules that the reaction is happening within. It is stealing energy from all of those things. And in stealing all of that energy, we find that the temperature of the system comes down. And that is what an endothermic reaction is, where it takes energy to break the reactants apart, and we don't get as much energy out on the backside. And that energy is pulled literally from the environment. It is pulled from the glassware, from the solution, from the liquid. If your hands are touching it, it's pulled from your hands. It's pulled from the table. It's pulled from everywhere. And that reaction then cools down as it proceeds. And that is an endothermic reaction. Okay? So our endothermic reaction, as our endothermic reaction proceeds, what we're doing is we're putting all this energy in, and we're not getting very much energy back out. And so what we say is that the products are higher in energy overall than our reactants. So we'll summarize that real quick down here. And we'll say that in an endothermic reaction, we recognize that endothermic reaction as having reactants and products, and that we are going up in energy, and that the products are higher in energy than our reactants. And when that happens, and we see that type of energy diagram, products higher in energy than reactants, we recognize it as the temperature of the system going down. So we say that energy is pulled from the environment to break bonds. And we find that the energy of the system goes down. Literally, the temperature goes down. And that's how we recognize that endothermic reaction. So in an endothermic reaction, energy is a reactant. And we go to make the products. And what we find is that the temperature winds up going down. That's our endothermic reaction. Let's look at the flip side of that. Let's look at an exothermic reaction. Okay, so in an exothermic reaction, here what winds up happening is that when we draw our energy diagram, we find that when we look at the reactants and we look at the products, that relative to one another, the products are lower in energy than the reactants. In this case, more energy is released in the bond making process than was consumed in the bond breaking process. So when I look at my energy cost, and how much energy it takes to get over this activation energy barrier, that energy I can look at as being here. This is my H enthalpy of my reactants. And my energy gain in coming out on the backside. And how much energy is coming out. The amount of energy that is coming out is much greater than my energy cost. In this one, the energy or the enthalpy of the products is greater than the enthalpy of the reactants. And so what we would say here is we could say that H reactants in this case is less than the enthalpy of the products. That more energy is produced. The bonds of the products are more stable than the bonds of the reactants. So in this case, when we write out the chemical reaction and we write out reactants, go to form products. Now we get energy on this side, energy as a product. Of an exothermic reaction. Okay, so when energy is a product, what winds up happening in this case, when the bonds are made, the bonds that are being made are more stable than the reactants. And so if we look at this as our sort of chemical reaction as what was happening before, and we draw our before and after pictures, We've got our thermometer in here. And we'll copy this. Throw it over here. So this is at the beginning of our chemical reaction. What we find is that this material maybe started out somewhere around 25 degrees Celsius, and that this is our T initial. T initial is our starting spot. And then what we're going to do, so this is the before the reaction begins. And then after the reaction, what we do is we measure the temperature final, and we find that the temperature final in this case has gone up, that the temperature of the system is hotter. So we allow some time to take place, and the temperature goes up. Now, why did the temperature go up? Well, when energy is released, think about what is happening when that energy is released. When that energy is released, we take those reactants that are floating around, that as those reactants are floating around, they're recombining to form their products. And so these guys are going to be spheres, essentially, that are bumping into each other. And there's a collision that happens. And as they collide, they form a new bond. And when they form a new bond, they make a product. So we're going to call that product this thing where the bond is made. And what happened was these guys were moving relatively slowly. They were cold. And they were moving slow. When they come together and they collide together and they stick together, energy is released. That energy is released as heat. And so now, as they are a bonded particle, this thing is now moving fast. And as it's moving fast, the faster something moves, the hotter it is. And so as this is moving fast now, so now it's moving very fast, and this is hot. And so what winds up happening is these particles, as they are created, and we look at sort of a blow up of our thermometer, we have that sort of big giant thermometer. I know this is not to scale, so don't think this is to scale. We've got the products now that are moving very quickly. And as they move quickly, they collide with the thermometer. And what they do is they impart energy to the thermometer. So in this case, what we had is we had the silicon and the oxygen and the silicon and the oxygen of the glass. And we had a silicon particle that was moving relatively slowly. And so this guy was moving kind of slow in all directions, just vibrating very slowly. And as it was vibrating slowly, this hot particle came and hit it. And when it hit it, it imparted energy to it. And so our hot particle comes in, our hot product, and it's moving really fast. And so it's like the cue ball right now that's about to slam into the eight ball. And when it slams into it hard. And what that winds up doing is this guy goes ricocheting off. The silicon sort of stays where it was, but it starts vibrating a lot faster now. So this is my glass of my thermometer. And in the collision, what winds up happening is these atoms now start vibrating faster. And when things vibrate faster, that means that they are hotter. And so this guy is now moving fast in all directions. Still, it's a solid and it can't move away from its location, but it has picked up energy and it is now hot. And what happens to this particle is this particle moves away. I think I drew it going up this direction. It moves away more slowly, and it has lost some of its energy, imparting that energy to the thermometer, causing the thermometer to increase in temperature. And so we're using blue to represent something which is colder and moving slow. And so we could say that this is kind of moving away slowly. And energy has been transferred in the collision. In fact, collision is my favorite word, because collision describes so much of what we do within chemistry. Molecules must collide to react. It takes one material knocking into another in order for a chemical reaction to take place. Energy is transferred through collisions. Every time you have a collision, there's a transfer of energy within the system. And those particles which gain energy move faster. Those particles that lose energy move slower. And it's all, chemistry is nothing more than a giant game of billiards and trading of energy through collisions, okay? And so that's what's actually happening here. Let's see what we had. And so we have our endothermic reaction. And let me go back just for a second and see how I summarized the endothermic. Endothermic was energy is pulled from the environment to break bonds. Energy of the system goes down. Temperature goes down. Let's do this same sort of review for an exothermic. So now in an exothermic reaction, we can do it here. I think it'll fit. In an exothermic reaction, what we see is we start off at high energy. We go to lower energy. We have our reactants and our products. Energy of the system has gone down. The energy is released from the high point of the reactants. That energy is given off to the system. So what we find here is, I want to do it exactly the same way. So I want it to look nice in the notes. Energy in this case is given off to the environment. In the making of bonds, energy is given off to the environment. We said in the other one, we said that the energy of the system in this case goes down, and temperature goes down. In this case, energy of the system goes up. Temperature goes up. Okay, and I want to qualify something here, because I'm realizing that in my wording, I've done a poor choice of wording, and I want to be careful of my wording. Okay, so I'm going to fix my wording in just a second, but I want to look at it this way. When we do a chemical reaction and we think of the chemical reaction, let's take the solution itself. So if this is the solution, the solution is the reaction. This is the system in chemistry terms. Everything else, the glass, the thermometer, all of those other things are called the environment. And so when we look at these things and we're looking at the changes in the temperature, the changes in the temperature are happening to the environment. I think I spelled that wrong. I want to fix that real quick. Or maybe I didn't. Environment. I thought I was missing my N in there. Okay. So so the system of the, or excuse me, the system and the environment are different. And what's happening is that the system is different than the word that I'm using here as system. What I really should be saying here is that the energy of the environment goes up. Because if we look at what's happening to the system, the energy of the system is coming down, energy is being released. And so I've technically used the wrong word here. This really should be environment. And I should change that up here as well. Energy of the environment goes down, but the temperature goes down. In this case, where was it? I want to make sure that the temperature goes up, and that's a key thing. So when temperature goes down, that's an endothermic reaction. When temperature goes up, that's an exothermic reaction. Okay, I've given you all the background. Let's take and look at the experiment that we want to do. So I'm going to bring in this activity. We'll airdrop it in. We'll add it to our note. Okay, so here's the whole activity. And this is ready for you to download on Canvas in module 6. Okay, so this is our endothermic and exothermic reactions. And we're going to look at two different reactions. We're going to look at the reaction of acetic acid reacting with, actually, that's not acetic acid. Actually, they were using citric acid. Krista, in her video, used acetic acid, but they use citric acid with sodium bicarbonate, which makes CO2, water, and sodium citrate is the name of that component. And in part two, we look at magnesium reacting with hydrochloric acid to make hydrogen gas and magnesium chloride. We'll work those and rewrite those. But the way that they did this experiment was they took a styrofoam cup and put it inside a beaker. And the reason that they do that, and don't just do it in the beaker, is because styrofoam acts as an insulator. So as the solution changes temperature, we won't lose as much temperature to the environment, or we won't gain as much temperature from the environment, depending on whether it's endo or exo. And so what we'll see is we'll see the temperatures of the solution being a little more true to what we would expect them to be using a digital thermometer to measure them. And they give us all the instructions on how we go through and use that digital thermometer to measure it. But in essence, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to fill in the data here for what we would see. Okay, and in part one, we're going to write out these chemical reactions up above so that we know what we had. We had H3, I can't remember citric acid. It's not one that I use all the time. So I'm going to go back and get the formula, C6H5O7. We may go a little back and forth here in order to get everything in here. C5H6O7. And instead of zooming back and forth, we'll do it the easy way. C6H5O7 plus sodium bicarbonate to make CO2, water, and sodium citrate. So there's my sodium bicarbonate. It's going to take three of these. And we're going to make, there's not enough room here to put this all in. Now I see why they just did part one and part two. I think what I'll do that did not work, because I'll try to write it smaller. So we've got H3, C7, C5, H6, O7. Reacting with 3 sodium bicarbonates to make 3 CO2, 3 waters, and sodium citrate, Na3C5H6O7. That's the first reaction. The second reaction is much easier. It's magnesium reacting with hydrochloric acid, and it takes 2 of these. And what we make is we make hydrogen gas and we make magnesium chloride. Okay, so there's our 2 reactions that we've got going on. And what we find is that when we do the initial temperatures on these, that the temperatures are sort of starting in room temperature mode. These things are all stored at room temperature, and room temperature usually winds up being right around 22 degrees Celsius, somewhere between 22 and 25 is usually what we wind up seeing. And so our initial temperatures here, when we measure these solutions, they're going to be at 22 degrees Celsius. And I think they usually have about 3 sig figs on that digital thermometer. So we'll go with 22.0 degrees Celsius on each one. The final temperature, when the citric acid reacts with the sodium bicarbonate, what we wind up doing is we wind up getting a lot of bubbling. We wind up getting a lot of gas so that we're producing this thing here, carbon dioxide. Actually, let's do carbon dioxide as being green. This guy is a gas that winds up streaming off of the reaction. So we get lots of bubbling that winds up coming out of this. And then we also wind up making water, a liquid, and we wind up making a salt. And this bubbling that we see allows us to know that the chemical reaction is really taking place. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any other real visual cues taking place other than the fact that this thing is bubbling like crazy. Okay, and our final temperature winds up going down. At the time that this thing ends, it goes down to somewhere around 16 degrees Celsius, 16.2. And on the other one, what happens is this one also bubbles, and it bubbles because in this reaction, hydrogen is a gas. And this gas winds up coming off and bubbling like crazy as well. So both of these chemical reactions produce a gas, different gases, CO2 versus hydrogen. But what we see is we see a lot of bubbling. But this one, when we measure the temperature, we wind up measuring a temperature increase. It winds up going up to about 27 degrees. And so these are our temperature differences that we wind up seeing with these, but they take different amounts of time. This reaction bubbled very quickly, and the reaction time took maybe about 1.5 minutes. This one, while it bubbled for a long time. It took a long time for all of the magnesium to react with the HCl, and it was bubbling for roughly about 8 minutes. And so it just took a lot longer for the temperature to finally come all the way up to 27.6. It just took a longer time in terms of that reaction. Okay, what I'm going to allow you to do is I'm going to allow you now to go through and to complete this part. You're going to complete the temperature change and tell me what the temperature change of each one. And be careful that when you're doing the temperature change, delta T is defined as the temperature of the initial, temperature final minus temperature initial. Temperature final minus temperature initial. That's our change in temperature. So watch your sign. of temperature, whether it's positive or negative, because you're always taking the final temperature and subtracting the initial temperature. So the change is always final minus initial. Okay, then you can go through, and they said, calculate the temperature change for each by subtracting the initial temperature. They're saying from the final temperature, but that's not going to give you. So if we take temperature initial, yeah, we have to do it this way. So this is incorrect. I don't know why they did it that way, because otherwise the sign comes out incorrectly. So if we take temperature final and we minus the temperature initial, it's going to be 16.2 subtract 22.0. In other words, the temperature here winds up going down and we should get a negative value. In this case, we take the temperature that is the final 27.6 and subtract 22.0, we're going to get a positive value. The temperature winds up going up in that case. So this instructions actually need to be switched by subtracting the final. Oh, it is. No, they worded it correctly. Initial from the final. So that's what I did. The initial from the final. Almost confused myself in that one. So go through and do that and be able to get these two temperatures that we expect here. Then what they want is to tell which reaction is exothermic and explain why. Your explanation is based on whether the temperature goes up or down, based on the reasoning that we gave earlier in the experiment. So you can go back and you can look at the definition of an exothermic and the definition of an endothermic and decide which reaction is exothermic and which reaction is endothermic. Which reaction had a negative delta T value? Is the reaction endo or exo? Explain. For each reaction, describe three ways you could tell a chemical reaction was taking place. What are three ways that a chemical reaction is taking place? Well, there's some things that are telling us that chemical reactions are taking place. Number one, we're seeing some gas formation. That's one thing. The temperatures are changing. So the temperature could be going down or the temperature could be going up. Those are three different things, whether the temperature goes down or the temperature goes up or the gas formation. And those are the only real three things that we have in this case. I guess there's a third thing, and that is that in each of these cases, these are solid materials. So we could define it this way too. These guys here are both solids. But this guy over here is aqueous and a liquid. And this one is a solid, but on the product side, that's a gas, and this one is aqueous. So what I've seen is I've seen a solid dissolve, disappear. I've seen gas formation, bubbling, and I've seen changes in temperature. Those three things indicate that a chemical reaction has taken place. And it would be hard to explain that if you didn't actually see all of those things taking place. So that's why I really wanted to describe those. And then which reaction took place at a greater rate? Explain your answer. Rate is time. They're asking here, at a greater rate, which one went faster? That's how we're interpreting that question. And that is about this time, how long it took for the reaction to complete and how long it took for the temperature to change. That's an indication of chemical rate. The one that goes faster is the reaction that has the greater rate. So that's what we're looking for there. And that's it. Five questions, five easy questions to fill out for this one. And we've gone through and we've done it. But we've compared endothermic and exothermic. And so just really quick here, what we can do is we can look at, and this is how I usually characterize them. When I look at an exothermic reaction without drawing the entire energy diagram, I always think of a reaction that the products are more stable and that the energy of the system has gone down and that energy has been given to the environment. Energy of system has gone down and that energy has been given to the environment as heat. And that heat is transferred through collisions. So in this one, the temp of the system winds up going up, or we should say the temperature of the environment really winds up going up. In an endothermic reaction, it is exactly the opposite. In an endothermic reaction, we are going up in energy. So the energy of the system has gone up. Energy, and that energy came from the environment. So energy from the environment was used to make the products. What we find is that the temp, when we measure it, goes down. Because we're looking at the temperature of the system, and the system energy is going in order to raise those products up. And so we find that everything cools down as that happens. So endothermic reactions, temperature goes up. So when I think of exothermic, I usually think of exothermic this way. Exo, outside, energy. It means that energy is being given off. And as that energy is being given off, the temp is going up. When I think of endo, I think of inside. Endo meaning in. This is energy in. And so the temperature, as the energy is pulled into the reaction, the temperature on the outside winds up going down. And that's how I think of those two systems. So exo, something that's giving off energy that is heating up, and endo, something that is pulling in energy, something that is causing the energy of the environment to go down around it as it uses that energy. So there's our endo and our exo. Okay, that's everything. I hope that video was supportive enough. I think you'll find that you should be able to answer these questions fairly simply. There'll be an upload link, same as we've been doing for all our labs within the module 6 for activity 25 here. And and I'll see you on Thursday. So everybody take care and have a good couple of days. All right, thanks, bye-bye.